It's Monday, May 13th, and this is TikTok. A big hello to all of our listeners. I'm Andrew Mock, and this is your TikTok podcast with all the global news you need to know. Today, China strikes back. In the newest wrinkle in the U.S.-China trade war, China announced it will raise tariffs from 10% to 25% on $60 billion of U.S. goods beginning on June 1st. This comes as a retaliatory measure after President Trump last week raised tariffs to 25% on $200 billion of Chinese goods. President Trump has long been adamant that the Chinese would bear the cost of those tariffs, but if you've been paying attention, you would have heard conflicting reports on that. Just yesterday, Trump's top economic advisor Larry Kudlow, in an interview on Fox News, conceded that China doesn't directly pay tariffs on Chinese goods. American importers and ultimately the consumers do.
The president says that China, it pays the tariffs. They may suffer consequences, but it's U.S. businesses and U.S. consumers who pay, correct?
Yes, to some extent. I don't disagree with that. Again, both sides will suffer on this.
Joining me now to discuss the ongoing tit-for-tat trade war is Sean Donnan. He's a senior economics writer for Bloomberg News in Washington, D.C. Sean, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with this latest news, China's retaliatory tariffs on $60 billion of U.S. goods. What types of products are we talking about here?
We're talking about a wide range of products. What the Chinese have taken is essentially a list that they unveiled last September and as part of a retaliation to a previous round of U.S. tariffs. And they've raised the percentage import tax on those products. We're talking about things like liquefied natural gas, something that actually the Trump administration had been hoping to export a lot more of to China. And we're already seeing some people in the industry there talk about that having an impact on future LNG products, which could affect, you know, obviously some of the big energy states in the United States like Texas. Agricultural products, there's a lot of food on the list. As we've all come to learn, soybeans are a big part of the equation there. The U.S. used to export some $14 billion a year in soybeans to China, and that has fallen off markedly, largely as a result of a Chinese tariff on U.S. soybeans. So they're showing no sign of resuming those purchases or dropping those tariffs. And if anything, this is going in the opposite direction. Again, one of the big hopes had been that with a deal, you would get a return to China becoming a big buyer of U.S. agricultural exports, which would help a lot of folks in farm states, which voted pretty overwhelmingly for President Trump in 2016.
So let's move on to this issue of who suffers most under these tariffs. And I think that's a key question that there seems to be conflicting reports about, to say the least. And really, I think we should lay out the timeline here over the past day and a half. You have China announcing the tariffs soon after Trump yesterday tweeted a warning for China not to retaliate. Earlier, he said that the U.S. was right where they wanted to be in negotiations. Before that, you have Larry Kudlow on Fox News contradicting the president. And even today, Trump is still tweeting that there's no reason for U.S. consumers to pay for these tariffs. So what's the real case here? And is it really that complicated?
It really isn't that complicated. It's really a debate that is happening between the president and the vast majority of economists and folks in the business community. The simple mechanical process by which tariffs are paid is that they are paid to the customs at the border by U.S. importers. There's some question as to who in the end bears the cost. What you tend to see is, and what we've seen over the past year, is companies raise prices, which means that they transmit through to consumers or soak up some of the costs. We've seen GM and the other big companies talk about huge numbers in terms of rising costs for inputs from steel tariffs, for example, which just have raised the price of steel domestically. The whole goal of a tariff is to raise the price of an imported good to make a domestic good more appealing. But what tends to happen is you also get the price of the domestic good going up. And that's one of the reasons why economists just say that they're just bad economic policy. A lot of the imports that have been hit with tariffs are parts that U.S. manufacturers put into their products, the finished products. They're able to source them more cheaply overseas, and that's been going on for a few decades now, and that helps them compete internationally when they go ahead and export that final product again. So it's a, you know, we're dealing with big, complicated supply chains that are getting hit by these tariffs, but the overwhelming evidence from economists and the overwhelming argument from business here in the United States is that they're the ones who are really bearing the costs, they and consumers.
I want to move on to 2020 because this seems to me like it's perhaps a political positioning for Trump to declare that Americans are not going to have to pay for these tariffs. How is this issue likely to affect Trump's 2020 reelection chances? I mean, is there a sense of urgency, at least on the U.S. side, to strike a deal? Or is Trump good at playing this issue up to his base?
In terms of the urgency to do a deal, really the pressure has been on from affected communities like the farm community, who have kept up their support for the president pretty remarkably, despite some of the pain that they've suffered as a result of Chinese retaliation in particular, but also retaliation from other companies like Mexico and Canada, which are big export markets as well. There's an economic need in some communities to get this done, and there's a whole kind of uncertainty that business doesn't like that is affecting a lot of business decisions. That means that they're holding back on investing in new plants in some cases or hiring more people. Then there is the question of, is it good politics to be tough on China? And I think the answer to that is yes, it's absolutely good politics to be tough on China right now. There's a feeling that China and its economic rise has hurt the United States, in particular the industrial United States and some key swing states like Ohio and Michigan and parts of Indiana and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, and that has left this kind of residual anger about China among a lot of voters that Donald Trump tapped into in 2016 and that he's trying to tap into again. The big question is going to be when those two things collide, that kind of economic imperative, and that's what we're seeing in the markets and their reaction, a big concern about the economic impact of this, and, you know, the politics of being tough on China. If Donald Trump goes too far and this really starts to hurt the economy, and not just the U.S. economy, but also the global economy, then that's going to feed back and that's going to hurt consumers. And that may start to affect their political decisions when it comes to the 2020 election, and that may hurt the president's reelection chances. But, you know, it's a complicated mix of things, and we really don't know where it's all going to end up right now. Do the Chinese want a deal? They probably want this all to go away. You know, this is buffeting their economy and financial markets, just as it's buffeting U.S. financial markets. One of the big things that we're seeing here in Washington is pretty bipartisan consensus on the need to get tough with China. The only disagreement is on the tactics, whether you should be using tariffs or whether you should be forming broader international coalitions and use that to really get China to behave better.
So now there's a few weeks before the tariffs go into effect. What do we see happening here in the meantime? Is there a chance they will strike a deal or get any resolution before then?
I think a deal in the next couple of weeks is extremely unlikely. There's been no talks scheduled, and we've had Donald Trump today saying he was going to meet with Xi Jinping at the G20 at the end of June. That really sets up that meeting, which is still some 6 weeks away, as a possible milestone, as an important one. But before that, it's really hard to see any kind of resolution.
All right, Sean Donnan, senior economics writer for Bloomberg News in Washington. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Turning now to other news of the day, here's what's happening. Swedish prosecutors reopened a 2010 rape investigation into WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange today. It also revived an extradition request complicating the bid from the U.S. to extradite Assange on hacking-related conspiracy charges. Sweden dropped the rape case 2 years ago after prosecutors decided that Assange's asylum in Ecuador's London embassy deadlocked their case. London police arrested the 47-year-old last month, and he's currently serving 50 weeks in a British prison. Sweden's deputy director of public prosecutions, Ava Marie Person, explained why she decided to reopen the case.
After reviewing the preliminary investigation in its current state, my assessment is that there is still probable cause to suspect that Mr. Assange committed rape, an offense of a lesser offense. As Mr. Assange is currently incarcerated in the United Kingdom, the circumstances now allow for an extradition to Sweden on the basis of a European arrest warrant. This was not the case prior to April 11th of this year.
Actress Felicity Huffman pleaded guilty to a conspiracy charge in the U.S. college admissions scandal today. Huffman appeared in a Boston court on charges she paid $15,000 to have someone correct her daughter's SAT exam. Huffman's husband, actor William H. Macy, was not present. The two are among 50 parents, coaches, and others accused of bribing schools to get their children into Ivy League universities. Another actress, Lori Loughlin, previously pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors are reportedly seeking the lower end of the sentencing spectrum for Huffman, which could mean 4 to 10 months behind bars. She will be sentenced May 21st. And finally,
once I had a secret love.
Doris Day, the golden-voiced and sunny blonde megastar of the 1950s and 60s, died this morning at age 97. Representatives for her said she had been, quote, in excellent physical health for her age until recently contracting a serious case of pneumonia. Day was one of Hollywood's biggest stars of her era, and she was a top box office draw, starring in movies including Pillow Talk, That Touch of Mink, and the Alfred Hitchcock film The Man Who Knew Too Much. It was in that film that she also sang the song Que Sera Sera, Whatever Will Be, which became her signature song that is most associated with her today.
Whatever will be, the future's not ours to see, que sera, sera.
That's your TikTok update for Monday. You can learn more about all of these stories everywhere we are. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and check us out on Instagram at TikTok. Thanks for listening. I'm Andrew Mock, and be sure to download the TikTok podcast every day for all the global news you need to know.